Radio Superfly im Gespräch.
Joss Stone hat nicht unwesentlich zum Soul-Revival der Nullerjahre beigetragen und ihr nachfolgenden Stars wie Amy Winehouse, Adele und Duffy den Weg bereitet. Mit Millionen verkaufter Alben und Kollaborationen mit Musiklegenden wie James Brown, Stevie Wonder und Mick Jagger hat sie eine beeindruckende Karriere bereits hinter sich. Am Mittwoch, dem 17. Juli, gastiert Joss Stone im Wiener Konzerthaus, ein Konzert presented by Radio Superfly, und ich habe vorab mit ihr gesprochen.
Okay, I'm in.
So am I. Hello.
Hi.
Great to see you back in Vienna on July the 17th. And I remember a concert also in Vienna. It was open air. And you might remember too, it started to rain, like really heavy. You just didn't want to stop. Only after the third announcement that it is too dangerous because of thunder and lightning. Which immediately makes me think that you just love being on stage, right?
Well, yes, I do love being on stage. I remember that moment really clearly because my tour manager was telling me to just get off stage, like now. And I was looking out to the audience. It wasn't about me and me loving being on stage. I was looking out to the audience that were knee deep or thigh deep in water at
like,
this point.
Like me.
Were you there? You were in the water? Yeah. So you were one of those people that I was thinking about. And I'm looking at them and, you know, you're in your cagoules, you're literally in the trenches. You are there and you haven't left. And I'm like, so why do I leave? Like, I'm here for the people. They are here in this crazy water. I mean, you literally could have dipped down and swum in this water. I was just like, there's no way that I'm just going to be like, oh, bye, it's a bit rainy. You know, no way. So they kept asking me to come off. So I remember the last song we played, I went round to each band member and I said, I love you. You know, if we die, then okay. And they were like, let's do this. You know, it was a really funny moment, but it's one that stuck with me. And every time I hear the word Vienna, you have a gig in Vienna, I think of that, and I think of that moment and how committed.
Yeah,
people are super committed to just being there and being part of that energy. It's magic, isn't it, when things like that happen?
But at the end, I really have to say it was quite scary. It was like a Roland Emmerich movie with all the thunder and lightning, like the world is going down.
It was magic, but yes, it was. I mean, magic can be scary, yes.
But when we talk about live concerts and you as a performer, was it clear for you that you're doing a live album, which you did last year?
I had been asked many, many times from the fans to do this. And I take a lot of instruction from the fans. You know, when I first began my career, the internet wasn't like such a big thing. There wasn't Twitter and things like that. It was all sort of word of mouth. And then I was a bit late to come to it because I wasn't brought up with it. So I didn't know what the hell to do with it. And then when I realized that actually I get a very direct relationship with my fans now, I started to ask them their opinion and what they wanted. And I started to run competitions for artwork and use their artwork instead of making my own. And we did like a remix competition where the fans took my music and remixed it. So we put out that album, and I just really have enjoyed including them. So one of the last things I did was ask, you know, what do you want? And there were so many people saying, we want a live album. All these years you haven't done a live album. And little do they know that it was the thing that terrified me most, because, you know, it's live. So it's like, well, but what if I do a whole tour where I don't think I did anything right? And by the way, I feel like that often, you know? And I did it. I was brave and I did it. So I recorded like almost the whole year. And then I picked from the last, it was the American leg of the tour. And the band were just like so good. They were super tight. They were really feeling each other. And my voice was feeling good because I'd had, you know, a lot of practice singing these songs. And I thought, do you know what? This is the tour that we take the songs from. So we now have it It was just released just to the fans, but now, literally in the last few days, it's now released to everyone. And it's streaming on all platforms. And the artwork is made by Vivi Haddad, who is a fan.
Really? I didn't know. Yeah, great.
Yeah, yeah, we did an artwork competition and we had all these beautiful artworks come in. And Vivi Haddad won that competition. It's like this big sunflower and all these gorgeous colours. Oh, it's so magic. So, yeah, we'll be selling that on the tour, which is cool. Mm.
To be honest, I'm not a very big fan of live albums because I always think life is life, you know. But I really have to make an exception. It's just rousing, and maybe because I saw your life several times, I can close my eyes and visualize it, you know. So when I see you.
Oh, that's cool. So you have listened.
Yeah.
You've listened to
it. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Sure. I have listened.
Oh, I'm so glad you heard it and you liked it.
Yeah.
Do you know what? The other live album that I've loved listening to over the years was Eric Clapton live album.
There are great live albums, of course.
There are some good ones. Some of them I'm like, I don't like this version, you know, because it's not the record that you love. Mm. But every now and then you capture that energy. And it's cool to hear the audience, you know, like they interject a lot, especially in the US, you know, they're like very good wooers. They do a little, you know, so I really like that. I'm glad you enjoyed it. That's great.
Yes. Your last studio album, Never Forget My Love, showed us again a very soulful person. Because life is bitter and sweet, as we know, and soul music is one of those styles where you can let it all out. Is this probably the reason why you are kind of addicted to this music?
I think maybe. I don't know how to not have that, you know, in my sound or in my voice, because I think that's just who you are, you know? And kind of asked why I sound this way or why the music is like that. It's sort of a confusing question, but it makes you look at your childhood like any therapy session would, right? So if I was to go back and think, what music did I listen to as a child? A lot of it was soul music and it was my parents' records. So you sort of are what you eat. But then if I look at my life and the span of it and where I've been and I, you know, there was a world tour I did and all these different styles of music. Soul music is not a style, it's a feeling. So it doesn't matter what I'm singing, if I'm singing over hip hop or if I'm singing over, you know, something with an Indian scale, you know, it's still soul music because that's just how I feel. I'm emotional.
Yeah.
And I'm an emotional person. I can't help it.
And you are also well known for playing with different genres. Reggae also, just to name a big influence of yours. But was it always important to always open your horizon, even if you're named as a soul singer most of the times?
It is important. I think it's important to set a precedent, you know, so you can give yourself freedom. So I noticed on my first two albums, they were very much controlled by the record label, of course, because I was a child. If they were controlled by me, it would be a disaster. So I'm glad for that. But I remember having conversations with them about, you know, the type of music that I wanted to make on the next album. And it was slightly different, you know. Mm. And I remember the lawyer saying, you have in your contract that your records must be in keeping with your last record, within keeping of your last record.
Yeah.
That just sparked my brain, like it lit a fire in my brain. It's not enjoyable to be stuck ever in any sort of capacity in your life. Do not be stuck. So if you were to adhere to that paragraph and do everything that's in keeping with the last record, then that means that you only can live in one genre.
Yeah.
That doesn't sound fun to me. So I sort of thought, no, I have to set the precedent and I have to just do as much as I can of as much as I can and free myself. Mm. It worked.
Yeah.
I freed myself. Yeah. We're fine.
Yeah, because especially your first two albums, they really put you in
One place.
Yeah.
One.
Which is okay because it's a great music.
It was a great place, but it was just one place.
Yeah.
It's not that I don't like it. So I just wanted to do lots of things.
Yeah.
So, you know, when you go to introducing Joss Stone, I got a little bit more control. Mm. And then on Water for Your Soul, that one was like, now I have no record label. Now I get to do what I want.
What I want. You know?
Mm-hmm. And there was all these, there was a lot of reggae influence on that record. There was a lot of world music, you know, influence. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of different instruments. You know, we had like the sarod. We had some Irish fiddles on that one. That was fun on The Answer. Mm-hmm. Different rhythms. And it just was great.
Yeah.
It was the beginning of the best life, you know, musically.
Full artistical freedom.
Yeah.
Kind of, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Let's go back to your last album for one question. You have worked with Dave Stewart from the Eurythmics, who you know for a long time, and you also worked with him for this musical, The Trimetavelous Wife. But Never Forget My Love, released 7 years after the previous album. So why was he, Dave Stewart, the perfect partner for the album?
So the Never Forget My Love album sort of began when I was writing the songs with Dave for The Time Traveler's Wife. Mm-hmm. So I was invited to go to his house and write these songs for this musical. And I remember being sat there and I was just chatting to him. I mean, Dave's one of my best friends. I've known him now for 20 years, since I was 17. Mm-hmm. And I tell him everything, my whole heart. He knows all and everything. So I was just chatting. And I was telling him about a performance that I did, a couple performances I did with Burt Bacharach. Mm. And I was like, Dave, these songs, you know, I was having to really learn them because, like, the music I normally sing, you sort of know it and then you vibe it and you jam over it. And it's okay if you change some rhythms or chuck an ad lib in. Like, it's cool. But with the Burt Bacharach songs, I had to learn them and be on time, and the notes were not what I was used to. It was very like deliberate, composed, deliberate songs. And I found that a total challenge and very beautiful at the same time. So I was telling him about this and I said, I wish I could do songs like that, but I wouldn't know how to even begin to write something like that. Mm. Dave was like, well, I know how. And I was like, well, I know you know how. We all know that. And he's like, well, why don't we just do it? And I was like, okay. And he goes, well, what about this? And he pulls out his guitar and he goes, it was the Breaking Each Other's Hearts. I'm sure that was the notes that he played. He strummed them on the guitar and it was very dramatic. And he was like, yeah, and the drums will go like this. And I was like, yeah, okay. So we started making that song, which ended up being Breaking Each Other's Hearts. La, da, 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 da. You know, it's very big and drama. And I would never have come up with that on my own. Dave just knew what I was talking about. He listens. He's the type of man that actually listens to a woman. And he just got it. Mm. So we did it.
Is he really like that? In several interviews, you always described him as a very relaxed person. Yeah.
He is. Mm. He's very relaxed. Mm. I mean, yes, there are times when Dave's not relaxed. You know, we've all had our times like that. But in general, he is just, as long as Dave is a producer, Dave is a leader. You know, he is the man with the plan. So, and the same thing with Super Heavy or, you know, he can be part of a team too, but his thing is like, I know what to do. Come, follow me. And I think that he's the type of leader that gives people the space to do their own thing. He's not controlling, like, he's not like, well, you have to do it like this, you have to do it like that. That high stress thing is not the way that he works. The way he works is, okay, I've got this. He brings confidence to a room. This is what we're going to do. All right. He mumbles, talks very, very quietly, deliberately so people listen. And then he'll just go, okay. He'll delegate very, very well. you do this, you do that, you do that. Okay, Josh, you got the lyrics? Okay, see, bye. And you're left with this, you've been inspired, you've got the map, then you have to just fill in the gap. So I just get my pen and paper and go see him the next day, I have all this. What do you think about it, Dave? That's great. Change this to that. All right, good, now we go. Like it's quite wonderful. He's a wonderful guy.
It sounds wonderful.
It is.
And it's and it's such a great album. I would never say it's my favorite Joss Stone album, but it's definitely under the top 8.
Oh, really?
Joss Stone albums.
No, funny. Oh, I love it. No, I love it.
Joss, there is one thing I always wanted to know, and I have to ask you that. Beside your voice, your trademark is also to perform barefoot. Still, are there any individual cases where you had shoes on, like when it was too cold, for example?
You know what? That's actually a good question, because I did not take my shoes off when I sang in Antarctica.
Antarctica, yes, I see that. But there could be solutions like a heater or something like that.
There could have been, but, you know, we were surrounded by icebergs. It was definitely inappropriate. So I was sat in the snow.
So you was wearing moon boots or something.
Yeah, I was wearing like snow boots.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's so funny. Yeah, I definitely didn't.
But
there was another time as well,
okay,
which is an interesting story. So when I was younger, I, of course, was who I am today, pretty much. I haven't changed much. But everyone was trying to change me. Mm. And I was a little bit like, no. Mm-hmm. Like I was fighting back against that. Mm. It was an interesting time for me. I was definitely like deuces up, because it was constant. Mm. And I remember there was this performance I had to do in Washington, D.C. for the Kennedy Center Honors. Mm-hmm. And it was to honor James Brown. And the president of the United States at the time was George Bush, mm-hmm. and he was going to be there as well. So the producers of the show were like, look, this girl cannot go out there with no shoes on. It is entirely inappropriate. Mm-hmm. She can't do this. Mm-hmm. And so then they came to me, they went to my manager, all this sort of drama about my feet. Mm-hmm. None of their business, but whatever. So they did. And they come to me and say, Joss, I'm really sorry, but you can't. And I was like, really sorry, but I'm going to. Because this is what makes me feel comfortable. Like, I'm nervous. I'm nervous enough as it is. Mm-hmm. Please don't make me put shoes on. Mm-hmm. You know, I'll fall over. Mm-hmm. Anyway, this went on and I was like, no. And they were like, yes. And I was like, no. So my mom or somebody called my mentor, who is Betty Wright. What's Betty Wright? And I had massive respect for her. Mm. And she called me and she said, honey, I know that president's not your president, but let me tell you that James Brown would be very disappointed in you. And I was like, oh, okay, I'll wear them. I'll do it. So I put them on for James Brown. They were red high heel shoes. I was wearing a red dress. And I, just as I was walking out onto stage, I stood on my own foot because I was nervous and I was bleeding. While I'm singing to him, I'm bleeding from my feet. I sang to him. I did Man's World. Luckily, everything turned out fine. I stood completely still because I was terrified to move. And about a year later, I sang with James Brown on like TV in England, and I didn't wear any shoes, and he did not care at all.
Yeah.
So it was a ridiculousness, to be honest. It was silly.
But I really have a nice title for the interview. I put shoes on for James Brown.
Yes, only.
only. He doesn't live anymore, so I won't wear shoes for the concert.
Never again. Not when I'm performing. Absolutely not. No.
That's really a great story. And I know that on YouTube you can find the performance.
Yeah, you probably can. And do you know what? They used that performance years later. I, you know, saw it on TV because they used it for the Chanel commercial that Keira Knightley was in.
Okay.
And I was unaware of that. I turn on the TV and I'm like, is that Is that my young voice? Like I'm 17.
Yeah.
And I sound ridiculous, but, you know, they used it for the commercial. They liked it. So. Obviously worked out.
Charles, I could continue talking like this for hours, but we have to stop now. And the only thing I can say, have a great trip through Europe, have great concerts, and see you in Vienna. And thank you for the nice interview.
Yes, thank you so much.